What I want to do as a father is I want to make sure my kids... First of all, my kids are probably not going to have much screen time because we grew up with a lot of screen time and we grew up with a lot of choice in terms of taking in media, music, films, comic books, that kind of thing.
Do you feel like that kind of replaced your guidance from your dad?
1,000%.
My name is Tim Anderson. Welcome to Father and Friend, where men learn to live for the good of their families.
Today we're with Wayne. He is a father, a new father, about 4-week-old daughter, and he is between Australia and England, and we're going to talk about fatherhood and see where it ends up. So, Wayne, welcome.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you.
Why don't we start at the beginning? Tell us your own experience with your own dad.
Right. My dad, I'm from a loving family. My mom, my dad, are married. My dad is very warm and he's a very kind and gentle dad. And I grew up seeing my dad provide. For most of my youth, my dad is the one who worked and provided. My mom stayed at home. Up until we moved to England. Sorry, let me rewind. I was born in Zimbabwe.
Okay, cool.
I moved to England when I was 8. And when we came to England, I saw there was a shift in the way of life. Most of like Western society now is, you know, it's a 2-people income. So both people need to work in order for people for the family to survive. So
yeah, you're talking about family structure that both husband and wife or man and woman have to work in order to make it function.
Yeah, it's very hard for one person. It can be done because that's what me and my wife do now. I work, my wife stays at home and looks after pub. We've been doing this structure since we got married, to be fair. My mom and dad, when we moved to England, the family structure changed. My mom started working as well. And shortly after that, my dad fell ill. He got a brain tumor and it affected his ability to do many things. Like he started to forget things. And what that meant is the dynamic had to change a little bit more. My mom took on more of the burden. She started providing more and being the breadwinner of the family.
And how old were you?
I can't actually remember how old I was. I think I must have been around early teens. Mm-hmm. I think I want to say early teens. So I think my family, my mom and dad, I think they did a fantastic job in raising us with what they had in terms of information. Because my dad's dad passed away when he was young. And my grandma passed away when we were young. I think we were like maybe 4, 5. I don't know. We were very young anyway. And my mom's dad passed away when she was young. And same with my mom's mom. So they didn't grow up with their parents. They didn't have the people to seek that guidance from.
They didn't grow up with a father figure in that sense.
No, they didn't grow up with a father figure, or my dad grew up with a mother figure. So I forgot where I was going with that. But basically, I think I was trying to say that even when you grow up with loving parents, things can happen along the line that like can derail you morally.
Yeah.
Like, for example, what I want to do as a father is I want to make sure, first of all, my kids are probably not going to have much screen time because we grew up with a lot of screen time and we grew up with a lot of choice in terms of taking in media, music, films, comic books, that kind of thing.
Do you feel like that kind of replaced your guidance from your dad?
1,000%. He didn't necessarily replace it, but it was a very strong competing voice. It was in fact, I'd say for a big portion of my life, that took over. Excuse me.
What was your biggest influence, you think, when you think back to those times?
I'd say hip-hop music, films, my friends.
What's your favorite artist?
Let's call it the culture as a broad term. Mm-hmm. My favorite artist was, I had a couple. I am from England. I'd say there was an artist called Getz. He's a grime artist. Very rebellious voice. He's a very like screw the system type voice. He's a think of a rebellious teen encapsulated in an artist. I was bullied when I was in high school. My first high school, I was bullied. I was bullied from primary school to the first part of high school. So I was angry inside, right? So that rage, in that music, I could relate to it. So I almost viewed those people as being, they were relatable, put it that way. They were my most influential voices. So in Christianity, like we believe that Satan was, he was a very decorated, before he became Satan, when he was Lucifer in heaven, he was a very decorated general in God's army. He was a very decorated angel. Lucifer loved music. Lucifer still loves music. Lucifer uses music to influence generations. At the time, I didn't know any of this. Like I said, like my family, my parents were Christian, but I was very atheistic in my worldview. I was very science-minded. So keep that in mind, right? So, because when you listen to this music, when I listen to it now, I can't even. I don't know how much you believe, like in terms of the Holy Spirit and convictions. When I listen,
think the Holy Spirit convicts us, certainly.
Dude, I can't listen to that music anymore. When I listen to it, sometimes I do. Sometimes when I turn it on, I'll listen to it once and it feels wrong. It just more than ever now, the conviction is turn it off. Just turn it off. Don't even listen. Turn it off right now. And despite how much, because I at one portion of my life, I was a music producer. So I love beats. I love making beats. I love the beats of a song. Sometimes I'll listen to a song and I'll make the excuse in my mind, oh, I will just won't listen to the lyrics. I'll listen to the beat, right? I'll listen to it. I'm like, yo, this Holy Spirit says, turn it off. So I didn't have that when I was young. So I would listen to this music and I would take it in. I would just encode it. I'd encode it. Without even realizing that these messages are becoming a part of my values, are becoming a part of how I see the world, how I see women, how I see family, how I see the world around me, right? So the moral of the story being, you may be raised in a type of household. Say your family, your parents are loving. Your dad is the best dad in the world. In my case, anyway, the moral of the story is that if you don't disciple your kids, the world, the culture will disciple your kids. They will disciple your kids with the wrong message. And I believe there is a wrong message. There is a right and a wrong message. And I was definitely taking in the wrong message from all the media I was watching. And
so did you,
sorry, go on.
Did your dad, is your dad still alive today?
Yes, he is. Yeah.
He is. So he survived the tumor situation.
Yeah, my dad's still alive. He survived, but his ability to do things is not the same anymore. So the dynamic between my mom and dad never changed. It stayed the same. And
that your mom is kind of the, she's sort of the leader of the family in a way.
Yes, you could say that. You could definitely say that in a way that there is sort of like a power imbalance now in terms of, yeah, I can see it. Like, I don't want to say it because I still like pretty much respect my dad. I love my dad. But like there is like an imbalance there. And I think it's caused by the fact that money does grant people a certain level of power over the other person. And I can see that for sure.
And he's had to give that up, obviously. Even if he wanted it, he's had to give up that sort of position in the family, I guess.
Yeah, I'd say so, for sure.
So tell me, right before this, we were talking about your journey up to COVID. Let's like get to, how did you get to there, that spot?
How did I get to COVID?
We were talking about your journey up into COVID, right, and the experience you had. Let's talk about how you got to that, the kind of person you were moving into there.
Right. So, like I said, you get discipled by the culture. And the most dominant voice of the culture right now is hip-hop music, rap and hip-hop. And those messages of womanizing, of being, as the kids would say, being an F-boy, the messages of, I want to say the very anti-family messages, the very anti-order, the anti-family, the messages of hip-hop are very anti, I want to call them anti-goodness, because that's how strongly I feel about that. So through my teens, I'm taking in these messages, and I at some point become a hip-hop producer. So I'm producing rap music I worked with my younger brother. He's a rapper. And I worked with a couple of my friends, and I worked with a couple of artists. So I got really involved, and I got to see the culture for what it is. These messages, you really take them in. I don't know what the scientific reason for it is. I think it's to do with brainwaves, or I think alpha state or something. When I think Michael Jackson's got a quote on it on an interview, he says, like, choruses on a song are repeated for a reason, so you can take the messages in. So I'm taking in all these messages. I'm watching films, and they're forming my worldview. They're forming the way I see the world. And one of the common themes of the messages I'm taking in are that as a black person or a minority, quote unquote, I'm a victim of some sort. I'm a victim of racism. I'm a victim of police brutality. I'm a victim of a power disparity between white people and black people. So I'm taking in all these messages. So they form, all this stuff is forming who I am, how I see the world, right? So I go off into the world and I act accordingly. I speak to people accordingly. These messages overshadow what my parents taught me. The good family values, the seek marriage, the provide for your family messages, they got stuffed down. And I went into the world and I womanized. I slept with multiple women. I drank alcohol. I smoked weed. I did all these things, right? And I saw firsthand how much damage that can do in someone's life. And so keeping in mind, I still have this worldview. I still see the world in this binary of victim and oppressor. So 2020 happens, COVID happens, and there's a lot of fear in the atmosphere. Like, people are very irrational. So picture this, my current worldview layered with a certain level of fear and irrationality. The media is pumping us with a lot of fearful messages. The world feels like it's about to end. I always joke about COVID. Well, it's not really a joke. It's true. It felt like a zombie apocalypse. It felt like the world was about to explode. So that coupled with the George Floyd riots, all that stuff. So I'm a mess in 2020. I'm like...
Were you in England at this time?
I was in England at the time, yeah.
I'm amazed that that story was so well traveled across the ocean. You know, I mean, it was big here in the U.S., but I'm surprised that it had such an impact in Britain as well.
Do you not think that's really strange, though?
I do think it's strange a little bit. Yeah,
it's very strange. Because here's the thing: the way I've described the media to my wife is that, As a black person, the media hijacks your emotions. They hijack your empathy. They hijack your compassion. They hijack your reasoning to a point where you don't want to listen to what your opponent has to say. Your opponent being white people or conservative voices. And that's what they did in 2020. They hijacked the most reasonable people, those voices got hijacked. And we were all made to feel as though this narrative of victim and oppressor is true across the board. We were made to feel as though, and it's still true now. Many people are still trapped in this worldview. Like, anyway, let me carry on telling the story of 2020. So in 2020, I've got my friends around. So this is what, like, you know, broke the saying? Broke the straw on the camel's
back. The straw that breaks the camel's back.
So the straw that broke the camel's back. For me, my worldview came crashing down when one of my friends brought this guy to my house, and this guy said, he was arguing basically that George Floyd didn't get killed by the police. Police didn't kill George Floyd. It was a drug overdose. And he said, we argued back and forth, and he said to me, black people have a chip on their shoulder. So obviously I'm raging. I'm very angry at what he's saying. I'm like, dude, why did you say that? So I it's safe to say I was not happy with hearing that at the time, but that planted a seed, right? That planted a seed that really, like, it made me wonder why he said that. So I started to, I don't know whether I started seeking out conservative voices or if they started showing up on my page for some reason, I don't know. So I started to watch conservative videos. I started listening to conservative voices. I can't tell you which specific people I listened to, but they sounded very reasonable. And I was like, why do these people sound right? Why are they making sense? All right. I'm like, these are my enemies, right? I shouldn't be listening to these people. But the more I listened, the more I was like, hang on a minute. These people have similar views, similar values to my parents. Conservative values, like family, pro-family,
pro-marriage,
pro-marriage, pro-kids. So like, yeah. I'm like, at this point, I'm like, surely, and at this point, I hate Trump. I hate him. At this point, I really hated Trump. I couldn't listen to Trump. Like I said, they do a really good job at hijacking your emotions. So you won't listen to anything these people have to say. So my worldview is crashing down. Like I'm slowly changing how I see the world. This content catapulted me into self-improvement. Excuse me. It made me look at myself and say, I am not a good person. I need to change. It made me look at where I was headed. And if I carried on, I would
probably have died.
Just because of the lifestyle that you were, is that like the lifestyle of hip hop and the rapper scene?
Yes. Yeah. Mm. The music I started to make was heading more and more into the pits of hell, should I say. Like, I started to make music about that would openly blaspheme, talk about the heathen lifestyle. Terms like that, it started to become really, really dark. And I couldn't see it at the time. I just couldn't even see how dark the music I was making had become. But every time I played my music to people in my uni, they would almost be disgusted by the things that were being said. They wouldn't say it, but they would, you could tell, right? You could tell, I like this. I think this is fire. Why don't they think it's fire? I don't know. Probably because they were born in good, raised in healthy parents' households, and they think this is disgusting, right? But you don't see it at the time. You're almost shrouded by the nonsense. You think you're right in the way you see the world. You think you're justified in your nonsense. So so it's after the George Floyd stuff. That's when I started looking into the whole conservative worldview, and I really like resonated with what was being said And then I realized I was living a nonsensical lifestyle. And I realized I wanted to get married. I realized I wanted to be a dad. And then I took a good look at myself. And the way I was living was not aligned with who I wanted to be. So I had to make changes. So I read books. One of the first books I read was Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which...
Yeah, by Robert Kiyosaki.
Robert Kiyosaki, yeah.
Yeah.
I heard he's a grifter, though, so I... I'm like, but that was valuable for me, because I, even if the advice was nonsense at the time, that really helped me to get out of my nonsense, right? So I started thinking differently about money, but the most important thing I got from that book was to read more, because I realized from that book that I liked reading. So I started to read. The next book I read was Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Mm-hmm. And he's a grifter as well. A lot of people are scammers. Anyway, I digress. But then I entered into the manosphere. Have you heard of the manosphere?
No, what's that?
Red pill?
Oh, yeah.
Right. I entered the red pill, right? Like.
Yeah.
And for a year or so, I felt justified in some of my nonsense. I started to view women not in the best light. It almost made me blame women for some of the nonsense that was going on. It brainwashes young men. You remember when we first started this conversation and I said, you can easily end up on the wrong echo chamber.
Yeah.
This is the echo chamber that most young men are caught up in right now. They are really... entrenched in the Andrew Tates.
Oh yeah. So you went from like one extreme to the opposite extreme.
Well, yes, you could say that for sure. If like, if you think
like, Andrew like Tate liberal is- to like this side of the well, yeah, it's sort of extreme. I guess I was thinking like what seems like liberal all the way to what seems like conservative, but I don't know. They're actually kind of the same thing in some ways.
The Andrew Tate is the furthest thing from conservative. He's not.
Yeah, but it's like he's painted as the conservative. And then, yeah, you know, like you said, the opposite seems like it's liberal, but it's not really. They're both this sort of
weird extreme
distorted version of masculinity.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's you summed it up perfectly. You go from, well, I went from the soy boy. Sorry, cut this out. I went from like almost like an emasculated, a toxic masculine from, I'd say you could say it's a liberal style toxic masculine to a...
Yeah, or it's, like you said, it's almost the victimized masculinity.
Yes, to the... he's, but also that side is also the victimized. They just don't see it. Andrew Tate and all those lot, they're not really a strong masculine either. They blame women for most of their problems. I went to that extreme. And then I went into the, I'd call it the masculine, which is the guys that recognize the feminine and the masculine energies, they call them. Excuse me. They have a healthier balance, should I say. They have a healthier balance, a clear view of relationships and men and women. I landed there. Mm-hmm. And it was good for the most part, you know, like they, mm-hmm. it helped me to meet my wife. Mm-hmm. I met my wife through that, and we were, I might go into a little bit of like my spiritual journey, if you don't mind.
Do it. I was about to ask you, did you consider yourself a Christian at this time? And
no,
you said still not, you didn't. So earlier you said you'd kind of been living basically an atheist lifestyle, even though you'd grown up with parents who would have called themselves Christian. You wouldn't have called yourself that at this point.
Yes. Yeah. So when I wandered into this side of, I don't know what to call them. They're more like, let's call them for now the masculine feminine relationship coaches. Mm. they were healthier in their approach to relationships. They honored the father, they honored the mother, they honored the nuclear family to a degree. But they also honored polyamory. They also honored... it's a very confusing space, right? They know things, but they don't have what I think is the truth, right? This type of worldview, it's in my case, I led me into this religion called New Age spirituality. Have you heard of New Age?
Yes.
So it led me into New Age, and me and my wife, we got married.
That's how you guys met?
So we met in England, and when I met her, I had been taking in these messages, these New Age terms, you know, the whole manifestation, the universe will give you what you need. If you ask the universe, you attract what you put out. You can attract wealth. You can attract the ideal partner. You can attract the ideal lifestyle. These are some of the messages you hear from age. So to me, this is very seductive. It's enticing. I want to be wealthy. I want to have a healthy relationship. I want to be a healthy man. I want to heal generational trauma, right? Because at this point, I had found something to blame. I'd found my enemy, which was generational trauma. This worldview, it puts you there. It makes you blame. It's coupled with psychology. Like, it mixes psychology, and it gives you this thing to blame and to heal. If you heal this, you will become the ideal person. So me and my wife enter this space, and we do some healing stuff, yoga, meditation, all that stuff, right? We take part in this lifestyle. Bali is
you really did it. You went all the way.
We went to Bali.
We
evolved in this lifestyle. Let's say we dipped our toes in. We were not really, we didn't get involved like other people. But what we experienced from time in Bali turned us Christian. So, yeah.
Tell me about that. Yeah. How did that happen?
We did a lot of these New Age practices. Yoga. I know yoga is Hindu, by the way, but what New Age does, it takes all these Eastern religions and it puts them into one mishmash of beliefs. So we're doing all these things. We're doing sound healing. We're doing all sorts of things. And as we're doing these things, things start to get really weird, right? They start to... So keep this in mind. We were doing these things and really think this stuff was real. We didn't think spirituality was like... Keeping in mind, I'm a scientific-minded person. I'm very natural in the way I view the world. The world is, you know, oxygen and atoms, and yeah. So that's all it is. There's no God. There's no Jesus. There's no spirituality. I'm just doing this because I want to heal generational trauma so I can be the best husband I can be, so I can be a good father. Mm. Right. So we're doing all these things, and things start to get really, really weird, right? So we're leaving this event on time. And we're talking, me and my wife, and we're like, if all these people are healed, all these people in this event, why are they doing drugs? Why are all of them off their face if they are healed of all trauma? Why is all these yogis? You know what yogi is? You know what yogi
is? Yeah, that's like a spiritual leader.
Yes, yoga, teacher, spiritual, that kind of thing. In the Hindu practices or the Buddhism. So... Like, if all these people are healed, why do they look so depraved? And why do they look like something's missing? And then we're going downstairs, right? We're leaving this place. And we get approached by this woman. And we got befriended by this woman. Like, she befriended us. She was like, I hate you. You know, it was a creepy event. He felt evil. He felt bad. He felt wrong. So from this conversation, we became friends with her. Excuse me. And she seemed like she knew what she knew a lot of things about, like, spirituality. She seemed like she knew a lot about life. She seemed wise. So we met her for a coffee. A meal. And we're talking. And very interesting worldview. I can't really pinpoint her beliefs. She believed a lot of different things. She had a pagan background. She believed in, you know, multiple different gods and that kind of thing. And then things got really weird, right? She did some things, like, we consented, but she did some practices, some spiritual things. At some point, my wife couldn't move her legs.
Wow.
From that woman was doing. My wife couldn't move her legs.
Was it like, so you guys got together, was it kind of like a seance? She did like a spell or something? Or what was the...
Dude, I couldn't even tell you. She didn't even seem to know what she did. But she was like, I can fix this if you come back to my place, right? So my wife can somewhat move. So she gets up and we get on the bikes. Because in Bali, everyone travels in bikes. So we go back to her place. On the way to her place, the only way to describe the feeling, it felt wrong. We were walking into pure evil itself. Like, it felt scary. But we did anyway. We went to her place. Because we wanted to fix what she did to my wife. So we get to her place and speak with her. She gets out the tuning forks. Do you know what tuning forks are?
Only musical tuning forks, yeah.
Ding. They are exactly those things, but those in, like, spiritual sense, they say that does some spiritual stuff. Anyway, she's doing the tuning fork stuff to my wife. She's trying to restore the chakras or whatever she did to my wife. We're sat there freaking out. But kind of like, we're trying to be nice just in case she's, like, you know, like, evil. We're scared, obviously. We're frightened. We just walked into this woman's house. We only met her once. She seemed like she knew what she was doing, but she doesn't know what she's doing. So obviously we're scared, dude. Like, we're like, this doesn't feel right. We can't say why, but it doesn't feel right. And then from that point on, when we left her house, have you heard of spiritual attacks?
I have, yeah. Tell me about what happened.
So at the time, we couldn't put it on it, and we didn't know this term. Right? We had no idea. But we started experiencing what can only describe the spiritual attack. Picture this, right? Logical people. Very scientific minded, very realistic in this world, even though we were doing all these weird spiritual stuff. That's how it's marketed. It's marketed as self-improvement and healing. That's how it's marketed. But it's much more complicated than that. It's grounded in a spirit. So we're leaving her place and we get home and we're staying in this place, like a small little cottage. And we speak, the lights keep going out. Sorry, the electric in the entire place keeps going out. Bearing in mind, Bali's hot, right? We came from England. England is freezing. Bali's boiling. The aircon keeps going out. So we can't sleep. We're like, okay, well, this is great. Like, we're boiling. We can't sleep. The electric's cutting out. So we message the landlord. And the landlord's like, that's weird. That doesn't usually happen. And then we check the electric, you know, because there's meters in Bali. Meters, so you juice it, and then you have the money in the electric. She's like, that doesn't usually happen in my house. I've never had a complaint about that. She goes, okay, I'm going to send an electrician around to have a look. The following day, the electricians come. They have a look around. There's nothing wrong. And the following night, the electric keeps cutting out again. It only seems to happen at night, funnily. Weirdly, it's happening at night. And the next door neighbor's dogs won't shut up. They keep barking. They keep going. We can't sleep. So she's like, oh, we tell the landlord. She's like, oh, that doesn't usually happen. I'll tell the neighbors, but I'm gonna send round some earplugs. Really good earplugs, by the way. She sends round earplugs. We somewhat sleep, but every time we wake up for the toilet at night, because the electric keeps cutting out, there's an eerie feeling in the room, like there's something there. We're just like there's a thick atmosphere in the room, like, and every time we go to the toilet, we're both really frightened. We didn't say it at the time, because you don't want to talk about these things, do you? Like it exacerbates the feelings. You're like,
Right, you're like, if I just ignore it, it'll go away.
yeah. We're both thinking stuff. We're like, where the electric is, dogs are barking. What's going on? Like, weird, right? So we consult with our friend, the pagan lady. And she's like, burn sage, just burn it around the house. It gets rid of bad spirits. Yeah, we do that. We get the sage, burn the sage. And first day I burned the sage, there was a corner, right? In the house, near the roof. I take the sage there. I feel like I should sage that particular corner extra hard because I can feel something there. And then I get a shudder, you know, like a just chills. And I ask my wife, what did you just feel then? And then she goes, bearing in mind, she's looking away. She's like, I'm like, wow, me too. I feel chills. I feel like I should sage that corner extra hard. As if demons are scared of sage, bro. Like, as if demons are gonna be like, oh, you're burning this vegetable. I'm gonna leave now. The next day, there's something really, really off about me and my wife. Like, we feel really, really like, enraged. We feel very, very angry. We started arguing, right? Bearing in mind, we haven't argued at all, like up until this point. Doesn't make sense. It didn't feel rage belonged to us. It felt like there was something causing the rage. This part of the story, by the way, this is where most people start to tune out because I would tune out. When I hear supernatural testimonies, my first instinct to disbelieve,
Sure.
even though I have a supernatural testimony, I'm like, oh man, I don't know. But this is what happened. So we decided to move. We decided house because you know weird things happening, we can't explain them. At this point, we're starting to be like, there's something weird about this place, we need to leave. So we left and went to the next accommodation. I'm gonna fast forward these things because just for the sake of time. So we moved to the next place, the aircon leaks onto the bed, onto the floor. We leave, we go to the next place. It's a brand new build, so weird things shouldn't happen, but friendly landlord's son, you know, like it's a great place. It looks like a really good candidate for us to stay. 3 days later, water starts to come down the side and water starts to get on the plugs. It floods on the floor. The walls crack. There's a massive crack on the wall from the roof. And we find a kitten nearby, like a small cat. We decide to take this kitten to the vets. The vets give the kitten medicine. We take the kitten back home. We find the kitten a new home in 2 days. And 2 days later, after we found the new home for the kitten dies. The house that we were in, because it flooded, it's unlivable. So we leave. We try and find a different place. When we get to the place, we can't go for walks because the dogs seem to really not like us. The dogs follow us around, they bark at us, they I had to walk around carrying a stick to protect me and my wife. We move. At this point, we're tired, we're fed up. Move to a different one because we can't stay in that one. Wife's phone got snatched out of her hands. We're locked out of all bank accounts. So move
Wow.
to the area we were in was noisy. We sleep. And we made accommodation. And then when we moved to this, things started to click. We sat down. Sorry, no, it rained the day before, like torrential rain, right? and the entire downstairs flooded. The water was up to the ankles. We cleaned the water with like a dustpan to get water out, right? We say, what are we up against here? This feels weird. It feels spiritual. It feels offensive. What's going on? Say this. After those words leave my mouth, the washing machine that we used before, the pipe burst open and it flooded again. It flooded again downstairs. We just finished getting the water out. It flooded and after we said, what are we up against? So,
wow.
Safe to say at this point, we're freaking out, right? Like, we're like, there's something happening and it's defying all laws of physics, all laws of logic. The scientific crutch in my brain isn't working. The confine, this worldview that I was safe in, it doesn't work here. Physics is being undermined, right? I'm like, we sit down and we Google Bible verse. No, sorry, rewind. My wife says to me, so I've been getting Bible verses coming in my head. I don't know a single Bible verse. I've never read the Bible, but I can hear the Bible in my head. And I'm like, that's weird, because I've been getting the urge to pray. So we sit down, Google the Bible. We Google Bible verses of protection. We read these verses with our tails tucked between our legs. We're frightened of what's going on. We read these Bible verses and pray, specifically reciting the type of prayers my mom and my dad would do, like, you know, in Jesus' name, I pray, amen. After those prayers and after reading those verses on protection, it felt like something lifted. We both started crying for no reason. It felt like out of our control. We both started crying. It's like a relief. And I wouldn't say we were saved there. We were saved in Australia, but we were physically saved in Bali. Because after that day, we planned to escape Bali. We wanted to leave that day. We would have left that day. If it was up to us, we would have left. But then when we prayed, what happened was we got access to the bank accounts. And I'm not saying God answers every prayer, but I feel like he answered that prayer because we were in so much spiritual danger from what we were doing. I think what we were doing attracted the spiritual attacks. I think that the sage, the whatever stuff, all the new age practices we were doing caused the spiritual attacks to intensify to that point. We realized all this when we came to Australia and we started attending church. We started reading the Bible. The Bible talks very explicitly about divination, witchcraft, and that kind of thing. And New Age falls under witchcraft. So we concluded that what we were going spiritual attacks caused by what we were doing. And we then started seeking out similar testimonies. And there's so many people in there, maybe millions of people who've left New Age and they've come to Christianity, they've come to Christ under circumstances as us. We only dipped our toes, and what we found was nothing short of hell itself. And so when we left, we then found Christianity. We were saved when we were reading Luke. I think it was Luke or one of the Gospels. And we read we were reading up until the point where Jesus gets killed. And at that point, the gospel sunk in. I realized what the gospel means. And my wife realized what the gospel means. And the point of it being Jesus, God himself, came into the world, lived his life, and he healed people, he performed miracles, and then he predicted his own death. And then he died, and then he rose. And we're reading this. He predicted all this, and the book of Isaiah talks about it 1,000 years before. And why, realizing that Jesus did this, to pay for the sins of people, of humans, the sinful life that I was living in, you know, like growing up. Jesus did this to reconnect me with God, because the wages of sin are death. When you sin, you die spiritually, right? So he did this so that I could be reconnected with God. So every single person in this world can be reconnected to God. When that sunk, like, I just couldn't ignore it. It was almost like something clicked. And I was like, oh, wow, this is real. The spiritual realm is real. Jesus is real. Mm. God is real.
Do you feel like when you realized that, was it kind of like, this is what I've been looking for?
I stopped searching. Like
my all my searching brought me here to this moment.
Yeah, it's like, exactly. Like, my bio on Instagram is, I used to be a seeker. My bio was the truth seeker. Now it says former seeker. Because I think this is the truth. I believe it without a reasonable doubt. I believe that Jesus was God, is God. And I believe. Because when I was growing up, I thought it was myth. And it took that situation in Bali for me to realize that the world isn't purely material. It's not just science. Science couldn't hold it together for me in Bali. Like, Bali is a different beast. It's, things happen there that you never see in the West, unless you're looking. Like, you can never see it in the West. Like, God has been like taken out of the conversation for the most part. Like, in England up until this point, you don't hear about God. In Australia, you don't hear much about God. In America, you don't hear much about God. So God has been taken out of the conversation. When you go to Africa, or if you go to Asia, they still talk about spiritual things. You still see things where you're like, what? Where you're like, that shouldn't happen, right? Yeah. That just shouldn't happen to my scientific worldview. Shouldn't possible.
Yeah. So that's a beautiful thing. You and your wife, would you say that you and your wife became Christians, believed in Jesus basically at the same time?
I think so, yeah. Because when I got home because I was listening to the Bible, we're listening to the same book, I think it was Luke. I forgot which book it was. It was one of the Gospels. Mm-hmm. And I got to the point where Jesus is being crucified. And then when I got home and I told her, she was like, yeah, like it clicked for me as well. It clicked for me what the gospel is and why he had to die. We were saved at the exact same time, I'd say. The weird thing, it feels, when I look back, I think God was in all of that. My journey since I was young, I was supposed to go through all the things I went through. And I think I was supposed to meet my wife, even though we met as like unbelievers. It feels as though I've been guided by the Holy Spirit to get to this point. And do you know what's crazy as well? Like, when I think back how I used to see the world, if I was to have a conversation with myself, maybe let's say 5 years ago, I would think current me has lost his mind. I would think, because when my mom was telling me about, like, you know, Jesus and spiritual things, I thought my mom was crazy. I thought my dad was nuts. I thought most of my family, I thought I knew better than my mom and dad. And I, to a degree, I think parenting is very important. I think, but I also do think, like, if you don't disciple your kids, the world will disciple your kids.
The culture will. Let's talk about that for a second. So you have a 1 year or a 0 year old, 4 weeks old, zero. Right? So you're a new dad. Yeah. What are some of the things that you're doing with her now? What are some of the things you hope to do with her in the near future?
So right now, the most important thing for me to cook for my wife, to clean while she breastfeeds, is to be present with my daughter, to hold, change a diaper, to have those moments of bonding, eye contact, playing, speaking to her. Like, even if she doesn't understand, like, I'm about to change your diaper now. That's a big cuddles. You know, tell her that she is image of God, that she's an image bearer. That's what we are as humans. We're image bearers. And that, and I pray for her all the time. I pray for her salvation. And I show her that I love my wife. I kiss my wife in front of her. I hug my wife. I cook for my wife. I stay up sometimes when she can't, because she struggles to sleep on the bed. I stay up and I hold her while my wife sleeps. The reason why I do this, so I'm going to go back to like the Bible and what it says about fatherhood, because it's important to say, because this is what my worldview now is founded on. It's, I think the Bible is the only source of reliable truth. It's not that you can't find truth elsewhere, but I think it's important for people to have a foundation. And I think Bible for me is that foundational truth of what fathers should do. Because what I think the Bible is, it's almost like a manual. It's a history book. It's a book. Sorry. History book. But it's also a love letter for humanity from the creator, from the one who made us. That's what the Bible is. And I, sorry, I wrote notes and I can't find them. There we go. Found it. So God says to Adam and Eve, be fruitful and multiply. God said this in Genesis, Genesis 1, verse 28. He says, be fruitful and multiply. So being a father is fulfilling a divine commandment from the one who made us, right? Yes. So fathering well is reflecting God's fatherhood, because God is a father, as well as the Son and the Holy Spirit, but he is a father. Earthly fathers are meant to mirror God's character to their kids. And when she's older, right now, this may or may not apply, but this is what I want to do when she's older. So I want to be a spiritual leader of my family and to teach my children about God and his laws and his ways. This includes setting a moral example, like fostering faith in the household. That includes praying, you know, engaging in interactive things, involving the Bible. And some people will say this is, and I say, yes, it is. Because if I don't brainwash my kids with the Bible, the culture will brainwash my kids with, what is it? Money, love. Money, sex, drugs, and all those good old anti-family hip-hop values. If I don't brainwash my kids, someone else will. And fathering well, according to the Bible, includes provision, protection. That includes providing for my family, protecting them from harm and physical, emotional, and spiritual harm. Because spiritual harm is a thing. Spiritual harm is a thing. And many people will completely be blind to this. And I don't say this from pride. God made the world, but Satan has dominion right now. Satan has a degree of power right now. God allows Satan a degree of dominion so that we choose God, because God didn't make robots, right? God made humans with free will, so that we choose to love God over Satan. For the majority of my life, I didn't know this, but I loved Satan. I loved his music. I loved his values. And I think as a father, you want to protect your kids from the temptation of Satan, because he is the great tempter. He will tempt your kids. And at this point, I know probably a few people have switched off because I'm talking about the Bible too much, but it's, and I have dabbled in many different things. Psychology, I've dabbled in New Age, which encompasses Hinduism. To me, I'm going to be the one that I get, right? It's with, it just hitting your kids and that's it. you want to have loving discipline. It's essential for growth and wisdom. As fathers, I think it's important that we correct our kids.
When I was just reading a study actually just today that it's from a institution in the U.S. and they're a research institution, and they were saying they have a lot of studies done talking about how loving, authoritative parenting is the best preventative measure for children's mental health as they grow up. And you know what the other one was? That was one. And the other thing was parents who have a high view of marriage, that they have a good relationship with their significant other, with their spouse.
Yeah.
And that those were two of the major factors that allowed children to grow up in the healthiest mental environment where they would have less issues as they get older. So I found that very ironic, because that's what God calls us to and commands us to.
Yeah. I think the deeper I get into my faith, I mean, like I'm very new to the faith. It's just that I take it really seriously. But the more I look into it and the more I learn, I realize that the world, science is catching on. Science is catching on to what the Bible said many years ago. And a lot of the new scientific discoveries, the Bible said it years ago. And a lot of materialistic people, material naturalistic people wouldn't like me saying that, but it's true. It's, we're only catching on to what the Bible said.
Yeah.
Look at what we're doing to kids who are raised in, say, the more gentle parenting route. I'm a radiographer by profession, so I do x-rays and I do that kind of thing. So I meet many kids, like I x-ray many dental scans, etc. And you can see the result of gentle parenting. And, you know, I thank God that, like, I was saved when I was saved, because we were going to do gentle parenting. And now I'm seeing the result of gentle parenting on the kids. And of course, there's things.
By gentle parenting, you mean the parenting that's basically child-led.
Yes.
The child gets to decide whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
Dude, we'd be eating cookies and ice cream for every meal if my kids got to decide what we were going to do.
Exactly. It's very dangerous. And I think it only becomes dangerous when they're older. When they're young, it's cute. Oh, my kid's being defiant. My kid's not listening. My kid wants cookies. My kid is hitting me. Okay, now, but my kid is now 18 and is hitting me.
Yeah, that's a different animal right there.
Yeah. So now what do you do? Then your kids have to be discipled by the police. Now you're relying on the system to disciple your kids. You're relying on school. Parents, I know I'm like, you know, I'm like a month into being a dad. So how dare I, right? But what I'm saying is not my, it's not my knowledge, is the wisdom from the Bible. If we don't disciple our kids, the world will. School should not raise your kids. You should. The culture shouldn't raise your kids. Like, you should. I've been providing for my wife. She's been staying at homes. Since we got married, so that's like 2 years now. It's hard to do the single person income household. It's hard, especially in Australia, in England, in America, because these societies are built on two income households. So, but someone's got to look after the kids. One of you works, the other person looks after the kid. That's how we're doing it. Because, and we're going to homeschool. We are 100% going to homeschool, because nowadays they're teaching your kids porn in school. There's porn books in school, man, like funded by Planned Parenthood, by the way. It's sick. But like, someone will disciple the kids if we don't do it. So.
Yeah. No, that's great. Man, Wayne, I thank you so much for all your time. I really do. It's been a great conversation. It's been fun for me to hear your story. It's really fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All that. Yeah, no worries.
Fellow fathers and friends, so glad you could join us for this episode. To stay connected, visit our website at fatherandfriend.com. Sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media sites. Be sure to like, follow, and share with fellow dads and families in your community. If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss, send us a message and let us know. Until our next episode, keep showing up, loving deeply, and making an impact for the good of your family. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Father and Friend.